From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Well, between 2000 and 2011, 13 Oklahoma State football players said they participated in some form of academic misconduct, while 16 others were named by teammates as also having had schoolwork done for them. Drug use by star players was tolerated.
Marijuana was very common among players on the team.
I knew some guys would smoke before practice. Sure, it was players that failed drug tests on the first day of orientation coming in, and nothing happened to them because they were expected to be a top-ranked player.
We've done a lot of investigating about a lot of things. Every time somebody brings something up about our program, we investigate it. We do the best we can. There's nobody in this organization that wants to do anything that's not above board, and we don't want our players to do it either. That's not what the program's built on, and that's not what we're going to do. But as I said before, I made a statement. Don't ask me any more questions about this.
I think it's, you've got Daniel Snyder, who's a traditionalist. He said he clearly is not going to change it. Then you have the Indian tribes who say, listen, this is offensive to us. And I think everyone's sensitive to that. It's a very tough call. The NFL is kind of backing Daniel Snyder here.
And the 0-2. Not that time. See you later. Swing and a miss. 10 strikeouts now for Sanchez. Ground ball left side. That is a base hit. Here comes Prince rounding third. Vicieto will have no play. It's an RBI single for Infante. Here's the 0-2. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. And the Tigers have a 6.5 game lead in the Central.
Yes, welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, as always, Al Martin. I want to remind you all you can weigh in. Let your voice be heard each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WKAR AM 870 by following me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR, like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We want to hear what's on your mind. And, of course, you know that you can give us a ring right here at Current Sports by calling 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. As you just heard, we have tons, and I do mean tons, to talk about. Some of the biggest stories over these past few days have been about the Yahoo Sports Report and also the Sports Illustrated Sports Report that kind of deals with some issues in the college sporting world. Yes, there are many, many people talking about these stories. You don't want to miss them as we run down those in our headliners. Again, we also want to know how you've been enjoying the show so far. I encourage all the dedicated Current Sports listeners out there to let us know what you like, what you don't like, and post some conversations that you would like to hear discussed right here on the show. Again, tweet me, Facebook me, give us a call here. Again, 517-355-9527. Pick up that phone. We'll put you on the air and express your thoughts on anything we talk about today. All right, let's dive into our headliners. Ndamukong Suh, he just stays in the news, ladies and gents. The Detroit Lions defensive tackle, who's currently appealing a $100,000 fine from the NFL. He was investigated in August for allegedly flashing a pellet gun at a cable repairman. However, no charges will be filed against Suh, according to the Detroit Free Press. Now, according to the police report, the cable guy, who was working on a utility pole in Sue's backyard, said Suh pointed a gun at him that, quote, looked like an AK-47, end quote. Now, the incident happened on August 16th. Birmingham, Michigan Deputy Police Chief Mark Clements said that Suh was cooperative when questioned about the incident. Here's Sue's version of the incident from the Free Press. He says that Suh told officers, quote, that he was in fear for his family members' safety daily and would always protect his family. If you think I show aggression on the football field, I would show more to protect my family. That's what he told officers. Suh said his sister turned the weapon, and it looked like an air. It was an apparent air rifle. I guess that's what's being reported. So they said they turned that weapon over to police for the duration of their investigation. Birmingham police reviewed surveillance video with Ndamukong Suh's sister on August 20th at the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office, and the security footage backed up Suh's version of events, and police decided not to press any charges. You know what? I really think that story just kind of got blown out of proportion. Because, I mean, come on. I mean, anyone who's in your backyard, if you just see a man in your backyard doing Lord knows what, you're going to go out there and approach the situation with caution. So, I don't know. I think that's a lollipop story, as I would say. All right, guys, the Tigers. Anibal Sanchez struck out 10 in a terrific performance, leading the Detroit Tigers to a 1-0 victory over the Chicago White Sox. Now, Sanchez has won each of his last three starts and is 7-0 with a 2.00 ERA over his last 10 outings, pushing him to a career-high 14 wins. Now, Sanchez allowed 5 hits and walked 4 in 7 1/3 innings while lowering his AL best ERA to 2.50. Now, Joaquin Benoit, he got 3 outs for his 18 save in 18 opportunities, completing a 5-hitter for Detroit's 11th shutout of the season. Omar Infante, he drove in the game's only run with a 2-out single against Matt Lidstrom. In the 8th inning, White Sox left-hander Jose Quintana, he pitched 7 innings of 5-hit ball, but he remained winless over his last 5 starts despite a 3.03 ERA over that stretch. Now, the Tigers close out a 4-5 road trip and return home with a 6.5 game lead on the second-place Cleveland in the division. Now, I also want to note that suspended Tigers shortstop Johnny Peralta said he understands why he won't regain his position if he is activated when his penalty is over. The shortstop now belongs to Jose Iglesias. Now, Peralta said Iglesias is a really good player. He settled to be the shortstop every day. I'm here to help the team in whatever position I can. Now, the Tigers are off today before beginning a home series against the Kansas City Royals on Friday with right-handed pitcher Justin Verlander, who's 12-11 on the season, going against Royals left-handed pitcher Bruce Chinn, who's 7-2. All right, Mark Sanchez. Now, Dr. James Andrews confirmed Wednesday that Mark Sanchez has a labral tear in his right shoulder, and the New York Jets quarterback is, quote, likely to have surgery that would end his 2013 season. Now, Sanchez was still trying to make a final decision on whether to have surgery now to repair the tear and instability in the soldier following his injury in the team's 3rd preseason game. Now, Sanchez could opt to rehab the shoulder in an effort to play at some point this season. Now, but sources say it's still likely that it would need surgery at the end of the year. Now, he told ESPN Wednesday night that, quote, if I needed surgery right now, I never would have left Andrew's office. I would have stayed and got the surgery. He told ESPN that in a text message. Now, asked if he wanted to deny that, and he denied that he was likely to have surgery, Sanchez texted, quote, there is nothing to report. It's reckless, end quote. Now, a source close to the quarterback said it would make no sense for Sanchez to delay the inevitable under the circumstances of the injury and the team's commitment to rookie Geno Smith. Now, Sanchez, who saw Dr. Andrews in Florida, is expected to make the decision on surgery within the next day or two. All right, Derek Jeter. Yeah, bad news for New York, fellas. It has seemed more and more likely as the season wound down, but the New York Yankees made it official on Wednesday that Derek Jeter is finished for 2013. Now, general manager Brian Cashman announced that the Yankees had placed their 39-year-old shortstop and captain on the disabled list, meaning his season is effectively over. That's according to Cashman. Now, Cashman also ruled Jeter out for any postseason play in the event that the Yankees, who are 2 games back in the race for the second AL wildcard spot, wind up securing a playoff berth. Now, he says that, quote, I think it's important that we don't put him in position to have further damage. So today I met with Derek and told him this is what we've decided to do. Obviously, it's not an easy situation. That's according to Cashman. That was a direct quote from Cashman. Now, a year after playing in 159 games and leading all of baseball in plate appearances, Jeter's 2013 season comes to an end after just 17 games, spread over 3 attempts to return from the disabled list due to complications arising out of the broken left ankle he suffered in Game 1 of the 2012 ALCS against the Tigers. So, in late Tuesday night, the Yankees acquired shortstop Brendan Ryan from the Seattle Mariners, a further indication that the Yankees were no longer counting on Jeter over the final 17 games of the season. So Jeter's out, folks. All right. Dan Cleary is coming back to Detroit, folks. He is coming back to Detroit. Now, Cleary, who has been with the Detroit Red Wings the past five seasons, has come to terms with the Philadelphia Flyers on a new contract and was expected to be present at their camp. Only he didn't show up on Wednesday, and then it was reported that the three-year deal that was in the waiting had hit a snag. Now, the snag was apparently that Cleary's desire to stay in Detroit. It kind of hinted on that. But the snag was quickly cleared up and revealed that Cleary signs with Detroit for $1.75 million, even after agreeing to try out with Philadelphia. Now, the Red Wings have to figure out how to make it work. They already have 25 players under contract and are over the salary cap. That was pretty much the only reason why Cleary considered leaving in the first place. There just wasn't space. But for Cleary, they made space. I want to point out that Cleary is almost 35 years old and has bad knees. He's had 9 goals and 6 assists last season for Detroit. The point is, it's really amazing. He's been such a big story these past couple of days. It's really amazing that he has. But, you know, a good drama will do that, I suppose. So, all right, former Oklahoma State football players have said that the program was plagued by widespread drug use, and often there were dealers, yes, drug dealers on the team, and that the school helped keep stars eligible despite positive drug tests. This is according to that Sports Illustrated article. This is coming from the latest installment of that article on the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Now, when all 30 players told SI that they used marijuana when they were members of the football team, players told the publication that some teammates even used drugs before games. Quote, "Against teams we knew we were going to roll. A couple of guys would get high." That's a direct quote from Calvin Mickens, a cornerback at Oklahoma State from 2005 to 2007. He told SI this. He said that, quote, "Some of the guys, it didn't matter what game it was, they were going to get high," end quote. Now, 3 former players admitted to SI that they dealt drugs in 2001, 2004, and 2006 seasons, while others said former teammates dealt drugs during 7 other seasons. Now, in 2009, wide receiver Bo Bowling was arrested and charged with felony possession of marijuana with intent to distribute, misdemeanor charges of possession of a controlled substance, and unlawful possession of drug paraphernalia, according to SI. Now, police had found more than 100 grams of marijuana, Xanax, and I could go on and on and on, a digital scale of more than $1,000 in his apartment. Now, he pleaded guilty to 2 misdemeanors and was sentenced to 30 days in jail, community service, and was ordered to undergo counseling. He rejoined the team in 2010. Now, former players interviewed by SI said that the Stars' positive tests for drugs were ignored, while lesser players were suspended or kicked off the team. So there was some favoritism going on here. Now, they say, according to Jonathan Cruz, an OSU offensive lineman in 2002, he says, quote, "I was kind of in disbelief that people could do the things that they were doing. It was tied to how well you could produce. If you could produce on Saturday, things could be overlooked," end quote. Now, coaches, including head coach Mike Gundy, were well aware of the marijuana issues on the team, according to Sports Illustrated, but they not only tolerated it, they also joked about the issue. Now, according to the article, the players called the program the quote, "weed circle," end quote. Now, Calvin Mickens, a former OSU cornerback, said he spent much of the 2005 season in the program, and in the summer he tested positive again and should have been forced to miss 10% of the following season. But he said he was sent back to the, quote, "weed circle." And this is a direct quote from him. Quote, "There were guys, I'd hear a trainer saying, 'Oh, your levels are going down. Oh, your levels are going down.' Yeah, right. You're covering up for them because they're a star." That's a direct quote from Mickens. Disturbing stuff. This report is really just sending shockwaves through the entire sports world. In another report, this one's from Yahoo. This one's really, really sending another report that's sending shockwaves in the sporting world. It's coming from straight from Yahoo, dealing with the SEC conference. Now, according to Yahoo, 5 Southeastern Conference football players, including former Alabama All-American tackle DJ Fluker, allegedly received impermissible benefits prior to completing their collegiate careers. Now, according to Yahoo Sports, former Alabama defensive end Luther Davis acted as an intermediary between the players and multiple NFL agents and financial advisors. Now, the report says Davis funneled money and benefits totaling $45,500 to Fluker, Tennessee starting defensive end Maurice Couch, former Volunteers quarterback Tyler Bray, and former Mississippi State players Fletcher Cox and Chad Bumpus. Now, Alabama has been made aware of the report, and athletic director Bill Battle said in a statement Wednesday, quote, "Our compliance department was looking into this situation prior to being notified that the story was actually going to be published. Our review is ongoing. We diligently educate our student athletes on maintaining compliance with NCAA rules and will continue to do so." Now, Alabama coach Nick Saban said Wednesday he supports the school's compliance department and then refused to answer further questions on the matter. You heard that during our open. It's a quote from Nick Saban. He was pretty upset. He started off the interview very, you know, the press conference, very cool, calm, collected, but then it quickly got under his skin, to say the least. Now, the Yahoo Sports report shows benefits coming from multiple sources based on financial records and text messages belonging to Davis, who is said to have worked as a runner for the agents involved. Now, Yahoo Sports authenticated transactions between Fluker and Davis, including money transfers, hotel stays, flights, furniture, and, yes, other expenses. Now, the report named three NFL agents and three financial advisors who Yahoo Sports said engaged in transactions totaling at least $45,550. That's a lot of moolah, folks. With Davis between September of 2011 and December of 2012. Wow, interesting stuff. Well, those are your sports headlines for today. If you want to share your thoughts on any of those, pick up that phone. That's right. Dial 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Yes, you. I'm talking to you out there. Pick up that phone and give us your thoughts on the whole, you know, this whole college sports thing is really, 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 really one of the biggest stories that we've seen in quite some time here in the sporting world. We want to know what's on your mind. And really, you know, we're posing a question to you. Do you think that most college programs have boosters and other sources that pay college athletes and break general recruiting guidelines and have certain pool that allow college athletes to experience favoritism in the classroom and beyond? Do you think most programs engage in this activity, and what are your thoughts about the Yahoo and SI reports? Again, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You know what? We're going to hit a break really quick, and we're going to come right back with our very first guest on today's show. Again, pick up that phone, 517-355-9527, and we want to get your thoughts on the whole Yahoo Sports report and the SI Sporting report about these college sports. All right, we'll see you in a minute. We'll be right back.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, Gloria Estefan tackles standards on her new album, but not all of them are in the Great American Songbook.
There's a Brazilian standard, there's an Argentinian tango, which is El Día Que Me Quieras from 1920, and, you know, there's Smile in Spanish.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm WKAR's Emmanuel Berry, host of Current State Weekend. Spend your weekends with me as I highlight Current State's weekday stories and explore Mid-Michigan's vibrant arts and culture scene. We'll cover from the latest at Wharton Center to community events. Tune in Saturdays at 11 a.m. and Sundays at noon for WKAR's Current State Weekend.
Well, Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, we are sparking the conversation about the whole SI report and Yahoo Sports report. And we're posing the question to you all. Do you think that most college programs have boosters and other sources that pay college athletes and break general recruiting guidelines and have certain pull that allow college athletes to experience favoritism in the classroom and beyond that? Do you think most programs engage in this activity? And what are your thoughts about the whole Yahoo Sports report and SI reports? Again, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, let's get to our guest for today's show. He works with the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan with Parks and Recreation as the events coordinator. He is also a photojournalist for the Saginaw Chippewa Tribal Observer. It's my pleasure to welcome Joseph Salmick to Current Sports. How you doing, Joseph?
Well, always fun to go ahead and talk with a fellow Spartan alumni.
Definitely. Well, I'll tell you what, it's always glad to have a fellow Spartan alumni join me on the show. All right, Joseph, for those out there who don't know about the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan, Joseph, tell them what it is and what you all do.
Well, in this case, we're located in Mount Pleasant. We have a satellite reservation over there in Saginaw on Aranac County. But as it relates to sports, you know, we have the Central Michigan University Chippewas in our backyard. And a lot of the stuff that you've been talking about, Al, very relevant, very timely to our Chippewa Nation, along with Central Michigan University.
Now, I got to ask you, Joseph, now being with the Saginaw Chippewa Tribe, you guys feel kind of sort of a direct impact when it comes to the conversation of using, you know, Native American names or references as the names of sports teams. Now, just in looking at the name Chippewa, that name right now, of course, as Central Michigan's mascot, how do you feel about Central Michigan using that name as its mascot?
Well, as a former public relations director for the Saginaw Chippewa Tribe, one person cannot speak for a whole nation or a whole group of people. However, in this case, you have an institution like Central Michigan University in a relationship with a sovereign entity like the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe, and we have agreements, a resolution that dates back to 1988 with our tribal council. My father was chief at the time, signed that resolution. It was reestablished in 2002 when some of this controversy was coming up again. And even the late Miles Brand from the NCAA Executive Committee reviewed this relationship with the university and the tribe. And they looked at it as a local issue, and they made the decision that as long as they're doing it with honor, dignity, and respect, this can go ahead and continue. And our tribe, we don't have a problem with that.
Right. So, and you all, you know, Joseph, when you talk about, you know, your guys' connection with Central, you guys have a pretty cool mutual sponsorship between Central and your org, right?
Well, just like, you know, any fan that would go into Spartan Stadium, you know, you come into Kelly Short Stadium, you know, you're going to see our tribal logos, you're going to see the tradition continues between a university and a nation, and how do we go ahead and put those words into action? You know, we have the student athletes come out and work with our tribal youth at Parks and Recreation. Our director of Parks and Recreation, Ronnie Ekdahl, he had a couple years playing for the CMU Chippewas, a Chippewa playing on the Chippewas.
So, right.
you know, to go ahead and to see those relationships, not only from the student-athlete side, but from the academic side, from cultural interests of the CMU powwow, and even this year where the Saginaw Chippewa Tribe are the homecoming grand marshals of the parade on October 19th. And we look at that as an honor of high regard.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us at Current Sports, I'm talking with Joseph Salmick of the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. Now, looking at the history of this, Joseph, when did the trend of using Native American tribal names and references become a, you know, fad, if you will, when it pertains to the naming of sports teams and schools? When did it start?
Well, I always go back to the Cleveland Indians and the depiction of the cartoon figure, the mascot figure. You can also look at Washington Redskins. Very timely what Commissioner Roger Goodall talked about just yesterday about the Redskins using the name. But with Central Michigan University, you know, you don't have someone dressed in regalia doing touchdown dances. You don't see the tomahawk chop out there. You don't see, you know, some mascot running around in Native American regalia. And in this case, the thing that I would impress upon your listeners would be, doesn't it make sense that a local community and an institution would get with a tribal government and to see how they feel about this? And I think the NCAA did an overstep when they were making these arbitrary decisions back in 2006. Since then, they've seen the rich relationship that we have between the tribe and the university, and they kind of said that, like, well, we're going to let them continue to do what they need to do in their local area. I would only hope it would work that way throughout the country.
Right, without a doubt. Now, you know, when when sports teams started to do this, Joseph, what was the general initial response from tribes like you guys?
Well, when we kind of looked at it, we knew that we were right in the backyard. And, you know, you look at the economies today, you look at duplicity of resources, you know, you have things coming from a federal level, decrease in funds. What an excellent idea for a tribal nation to work with a university. And recently we've developed a mentoring program with Central where we split the costs of that mentoring program, and to have student athletes be a part of that, to have our tribal youth be a part of that. These are the stories that don't necessarily get the press out there. But I tell you what, there's a lot of examples out there in Indian country with universities working with sovereign nations. And I would kind of challenge anyone to come up to Mount Pleasant and come to the Saginaw Chippewa Tribe and see what that's all about. Come for homecoming on October 19th.
There you go. A little plug there, huh?
Sure.
I tell you what now, Joseph, there's been so much debate, tons of debate, when you talk about the Redskins football name, the Washington Redskins football name. Now, first of all, Joseph, can you explain the meaning behind the word Redskin as it pertains to Native Americans?
Well, let me go back into a quick cultural teaching. Now, the effort of the French back in the day, they would go ahead and to do the scalping, to go ahead and show that they've caught a Native American or whatever. And then when they had those challenges as it relates to our history, they couldn't go ahead and to show the bodies of Native Americans. One of the things that they would do, similar to hunters, is they would go ahead and to skin the person, and they would go ahead and identify those people by the skins. I know it's a gory example, but a lot of people, when they think of Redskins, don't bring that visual connotation on how offensive it is to have a whole group of people identified like, well, we can't carry this body in to get our bounty and get paid, but we can show you the skin, and this is how those people got paid. And that's kind of lost in the history books.
Right. Yeah, you don't hear about that. So they would skin the individual and use the skin as a point of identification to get paid.
Yeah, that's correct, and that's why a lot of people, they find it offensive. The cartoonish caricatures that people do, but even in a politically correct society, we can go overboard. And one example that I'll use is the Marquette Warriors. Now, a warrior to our people is someone doing the right thing for the right reasons. You know, but Marquette Warriors had so much pressure that they changed their name to the Golden Eagles. Now, it would have been nice if they would have talked to the tribes in that location to go ahead and to find out, well, what's happening in your community? Do you find that offensive? Because I know there's a lot of communities that deal with that.
Right, right. So, Joseph, right now, as far as the city of Washington goes, I'm not sure if you know. I'm just throwing a question out there. Has the Washington Redskins organization tried to contact the the tribes around the area to see how they feel about this?
Well, that I'm not sure of.
Okay.
But I know very very succinctly that the ownership of the Washington Redskins, they would find it hard pressed to go ahead and to go with any decision, whether the NFL decided to go ahead and to do that. But I still look at it as a issue that needs to be solved by getting more people involved, by getting those local people involved. And I would only hope that as sovereign nations, that people consult their native tribes and their tribal councils to try to get a feeling of this, because I know there's a lot of school districts that still deal with those connotations, and you need to make that outreach to the tribes, just like the NCAA did with CMU and the Saginaw Chippewa tribe. And then they found out that, well, there is a relationship that exists here, and it's not just a athletic relationship, it's an academic relationship, it's a cultural relationship.
We are talking with Joseph Salmick with the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. Now, I just want to ask you straight up, Joseph, what are your thoughts about possibly changing the name of Washington Redskins? Do you think the name should be changed?
Well, at the very least, I think if people knew what this does to Indian country, I would lean on the side of they should go ahead and to look at what they're doing with the logo, what they're doing with their mascot, what they're doing with the name itself. So that would be a good example of something that I would find offensive.
Right, right. All right. Well, Joseph, let's shift gears really quick now. Of course, you're definitely an avid follower of Central Michigan football, the Chippewas over there. I want to ask you about Alex Nisenak and Cooper Rush, two quarterbacks who are, from mid-Michigan, the mid-Michigan area. Nisenak from Ithaca, Cooper Rush from, of course, Lansing Catholic. You follow the team very intently. You have firsthand interaction with the team through your work with the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe. Is Cooper Rush the right guy? I know he's been named as a starting QB for this weekend's matchup against UNLV, I believe.
Well, remember, when you went down to see the University of Michigan Wolverines play the Chippewas in the season opener, you look at your first-string quarterback when Cody Cater got hurt, our first-string running back, Zerline Tipton, very promising year that he was looking at. And you take that out of the equation, you get a chance for other people to step up, the next man in. But, Central Michigan sports with the Ithaca Yellow Jackets and Nisenak, he's paid his dues. I do believe that he's going to be able to start. But look at the body of work that Connor Rush has done at Lansing Catholic Central. And you got to go with Coach Dan Edis, who's a former quarterbacks coach, with D'Antonio. So, to go ahead and to look at what they're doing, I'm excited for Cooper and seeing what he can do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So you guys have seen a slew of quarterbacks out there just as much as the whole MSU football situation going on right now. And I know you were at the games. You're also, I believe you're a season ticket holder, right?
Oh, sure am.
Exactly, exactly. So this whole quarterback fiasco, what have been your thoughts really quick, Joseph, about this MSU football team?
Well, let's just go ahead and look at Spartan Nation. And I was down there for the South Florida Bulls game, and it just kills me as a Spartan alumni from Comm Arts and Sciences, just like yourself, to see the fans booing our team. You have to trust in the product, and Coach D'Antonio, he still has another game to go ahead and manipulate until we get to Notre Dame. But I'm a big fan of Andrew Maxwell. And a lot of people are saying, like, well, maybe it's time to go ahead and take the red shirt off Damian Terry. But, I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to go. But it'll be interesting to see what Coach has up his sleeve on Saturday.
That's why I say this week is such a huge practice week, because, they're thinking about taking off that red shirt with Damian Terry. And once you take it off, you burn it. It's done. You can't get it back. And, just for his benefit, for when I look at it, for Damian Terry's benefit, I mean, they have to be absolutely sure that Damian is ready for that game. So we'll see how it happens. You know, so it's going to be interesting as the season goes on, especially this this Saturday as they take on Youngstown State. Also, Joe, you were also at the premiere episode of Current Sports TV, as I sat down with Greg Kelser, which airs tonight. The very first premiere episode airs tonight, 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Joe, what were your impressions of the interview? Don't give them too much, man. Don't give them too much. What were your thoughts on Special K that night?
Well, I tell you what, whether it's somebody like Special K or Morris Peterson, T.J. Duckett, Magic, just to name a few, you know, we have this idea from Spartan Nation where people give back to their community, they give back to their university, and you know, they're basically role models and mentors within our community. And you know, I love to see that kind of involvement with Spartan Nation. And any chance that I get a opportunity to go ahead and be a part of that, you know, it's always nice to give back, you know, to your community.
Yes, without a doubt, Joseph. And I tell you what, you're actually featured on tonight's episode because you asked one of the questions to Special K, which I thought was a very intriguing question. So you got to tune in. You going to tune in tonight, Joseph?
Oh, you betcha. And you guys do great work, and looking forward to continuing to see what you come up with Current Sports.
Thanks so much. Well, there you have it. Joseph Salmick of the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. Joseph, thanks so much for joining me right here on today's Current Sports. Take care, man. All right, well, when we return to the show, we will talk about this whole Oklahoma State SEC situation that is going on and get your thoughts on it. Again, do you think that most college programs have boosters and other sources that pay college athletes and break general recruiting guidelines and have certain pull that allow college athletes to experience favoritism in the classroom and beyond? Do you think most programs, most college programs, engage in this kind of activity? What are your thoughts about it? 517-355-9527. We're going to take your calls right after we get from the break. 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. More Current Sports is coming right back.
On the next Fresh Air, Billie Jean King. She won 20 Wimbledons and championed equal pay for women in tennis, but is best known for taking on and beating Bobby Riggs 40 years ago in what became a battle of the sexes.
Every day, I at least get one or more people coming up to me. Most people, if they're old enough, remember exactly where they were that day.
Join us.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m. Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. I'm now joined by production assistant Matt Ludke. How you doing, Matt? You all right, man?
I'm doing great. How are you, Al?
Feeling good. Man, what a day in the world of sports, I tell you. Before we get to the whole discussion, because I also want to hit on Joseph's you know, comments about the, you know, the Redskins situation that's going on in Washington and whether or not that name should be used. Before we get into that, we have a call on line one. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. How you doing?
Great. I know you're talking about athletes getting paid.
Yes.
And I actually used to coach at a prominent university in Michigan. And what I have to say is that kids will sign forms that say they won't take money, they won't talk to people, they won't do this, won't do that. They'll look you right in the face and swear, coach, I didn't do it. But then you find out years later that they did.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, I mean, you can put all the stops you want in place to try and manage this stuff, but it still comes down to the integrity of the kids.
Right, right.
You know,
and I want to ask you, how, as a coach, I mean, when a kid just, you know, blatantly lies about that kind of thing, I mean, how does that make you feel?
Betrayed. You know, because we're laying our careers on the line every day. We sign forms that say that you know, we don't know of any wrongdoings. We're taking their word for it. Now, you can't keep track of their bank accounts. You can't keep track of who they talk to on the phone. But universities can keep track of our phone records.
Right.
They don't necessarily keep track of our bank accounts, but if the NCAA comes in, they sure can pull stuff like that. They can look at every transaction you make. So, you know, the coaches are, you know, I don't want to say they're not at fault, but it's less likely that they're involved because those kids,
right,
you know, they mean well, but they want to get what they want to get. And I'm talking about girls, too, because I coach girls.
Right.
And, it's hard because you think that you have this kid that was great and was so faithful to you, and you find out years later, oh, yeah, coach, you know what? I took money to model while I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, right. I can just imagine as a coach. Yeah, I guess, you know, betrayal is the right word. And thanks so much for your call. Really appreciate it. All right, yeah, this is certainly a hot-button issue, I tell you. Again, you can let your voice be heard on this issue. Do you think that most college programs have boosters and other sources that pay college athletes and break general recruiting guidelines and have certain pool that allow college athletes to experience favoritism in the classroom and beyond? Do you think that most college programs engage in this activity? What are your thoughts? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Pick up that phone and give us your thoughts on it. You know, just backtracking really quick, Matt. I want to talk about the interview we just had with Joseph Salmick. Again, he's a representative with the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan, so he knows firsthand how this affects the Native American community. When you talk about the name, you know, Redskin, you know, using a name like Chippewa as your mascot or name for a team, what do you think about the whole situation?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of a no-brainer to move away from it, especially Redskins. I feel like Chippewas is one thing. You know, it's a specific tribe, but, you know, Redskins is more of just like a pejorative term. And really, it's like they have so many alternatives. You know, you're in Washington. You can have any number of nicknames that deal with, America in general, like, you know, the Generals or the Capitals. Think about all the other Washington teams, aside from the Wizards. Leave the Wizards out of it. That's a terrible nickname anyway. But,
yeah,
you know, Redskins, it's just like, it's unnecessary. You've seen other schools that have, you know, slightly less offensive names change what they're doing. I mean, even if they went to the Warriors, the Washington Warriors,
right.
I mean, that's fine. And if you're Dan Snyder, why are you holding out? I understand the history of the franchise and all that stuff, but it just seems like, you know, with a rebranding of your franchise, you're going to make more money because you're going to sell jerseys so that people can get the new Washington Warriors stuff. I don't see how you could possibly lose by changing the name.
How does it hurt you? Because you're talking about an NFL franchise. You know, the NFL runs the world.
Pretty much.
I always say that.
Yeah, they can print money, basically.
Exactly. You know, changing a name to something else is not going to hurt that franchise, that much at all, I don't think.
No.
I mean, I understand the history behind it, but at the same time, you know, when Joseph put in perspective the history of that name Redskin.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly.
It's very, very ugly.
I mean,
you know, a derogatory term that was used in the Native American culture. And to have a name like that, to be the centerfold of a franchise, to be that name that everyone recognizes, I mean, if the Native American community feels as though it's offensive and needs to be changed, change it.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I mean, can you think of any other ethnic group that a team would be named after? No.
No.
Because it would never happen. And if it was a new franchise that was coming along, would Redskins even be considered? No.
Exactly.
It's like not even an option because it's
right.
just out of bounds. You know, you can't do it.
Exactly. And I always go back to the conversation I always have, with multiple people, you know, me being an African-American male. I mean, just imagine if the team – a team out there was named, you know, and the N-word.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, come on.
People's
now.
Heads would explode. Like, it just can't happen. And
right.
one of the things that I know, like, Bill Simmons has said repeatedly is if, you know, let's say RG3 takes a stand and says, I don't feel comfortable with the name being that, the Redskins would change it in a second.
Right.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah. Blink of an eye. You know,
that's all it would take. And maybe it's not his place to do it.
Right.
But at the same time, maybe he is kind of, you know, socially responsible to try and usher in a little change.
Exactly, exactly. All right, we have another call. Apachu, how you doing, Apachu? He's on line one. Apachu, welcome to Current Sports.
Thank you. First of all, let me apologize for calling 2 days in a row, because I know you got a...
No, we love it. Keep calling. Call every day, hey. Apachu.
Hey, North American Indian, generically speaking. I'm insulted by Chippewa. I'm insulted by Redskins. The Arizona State Sun Devils, the term by settlers, when they went into the Southwest to describe Indians, they were called Sun Devils. Mm-hmm. But they were ingenious in making a clown as a logo for the representation. It's a racist term. On the East Coast, Indians were called Red Devils. So I'm disturbed by that. I'd rather that they not use Indian names or logos or symbols at all. Just let it go. You know, we're victims of genocide. We're a colonized people. We're an exploited people, and we're not sovereign. I would disagree with Joseph. We're a domestic dependence, as described by the Supreme Court in 1823. Mm-hmm. Somewhat autonomous on some reservations, but anyway, I would disagree that we're a sovereign people. Sovereign means you are the ultimate authority. So yeah. I just wanted to put that out let you know that not all of us agree with that.
Right. And Apache, before you go, I want to ask you, this conversation has been had for years and years and years. Do you think this thing will ever change? Do you think they will eliminate these names?
No, not unless they want to. The Redskins have demonstrated how powerful they are. Everything's based on power, you know. And I've told people for years, money's not power. Money shows you where the power's at. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody was just saying that, you know, they make money. They're able to make money, and so it's true. They're powerful. They're right. Powerful. They have slapped us in the face. We're going to do what we want. You know, I used to buy that hat. The Indian logo for the Redskins is incredibly beautiful. I'm in love with it. Mm-hmm. But I would take off the wording Redskins from the hat because it's a beautiful logo. It's gotten to the point, Al, that Indians call themselves skins, and that's a misnomer. We're not skins, mm-hmm. You know. But we bought into it. I mean, the only education we know is the white man's education.
Right.
Joseph is calling himself Joseph. My name's Apache. That's an indigenous name. My last name's indigenous. I took it upon myself to disengage from that dominancy in terms of my identity. You know, so,
right.
I mean, you can say, you know, you can be orphanized and allow other people to dictate your identity, or you can be atavistic and embrace your ancestry and start determining yourself for who you are and what you are. You know, but I like what the Chippewas are doing, the reservation over there. I don't like Central Michigan University using the Chippewa logo, but mm-hmm. I do like the fact that they were in conversation with the tribe. I think that was respectful, and I think ultimately the tribe has the final say on that. In that sense, I appreciate that, you know.
Right.
But anyway, I hope I answered your question, bro.
Hey, good thanks. Program. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the insight, Apachu. Keep calling, man. We love you here.
Bye.
All right, that was Apachu giving his insight, and I totally agree with him. You know, if it's hard, you know, for other cultures when you look at this conversation to sort of understand where the Native American culture is coming from, just simply because they're not Native American, and you have to respect that. You know what I mean? I can't see how anyone out there who's, including myself, I'm not Native American. You know how I could just put my shoes in that of a Native American and feel what they're feeling and kind of speak. On their perspective, when I'm not a part of that culture,
right?
And if it offends them, it should be changed. Point blank.
Yeah, period. And I mean, you know, as a group, I don't know if anyone has gotten the shorter end of the stick in terms of American culture. Just considering what
very
you know,
true.
It's
yeah,
like
if you look at the history of this nation.
It's terrible. It's probably the darkest chapter that you know none of the major media outlets or politicians like to talk about, but you know that's you know they've just been the what's the opposite of beneficiary? That's what they've been
in terms of
the growth of America, and it's you know it's heartbreaking, and this is just another step and getting that out of the culture. I think you know you've seen Roger Goodell kind of defer to Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington
around.
Redskins.
They're tiptoeing around this thing, you know.
And I think you know the more pressure that gets put on Snyder, because you're seeing writers in the media start to refer to them as the Washington Professional Football Team, or you know, not use the name and actively trying to make that push I think sooner or later we're going to reach a breaking point where a change is going to happen.
I really hope so.
I don't know how soon that's going to be.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to say. I do think the change will happen.
Right.
I just don't see it happening soon. Like you just talked about with Goodell, and they're tiptoeing around this thing and have been for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think we're at a good point now where this conversation, like that of what we're having on the show right now, conversations like this are becoming more and more prevalent, which is why I wanted to talk about that on today's show, because it's becoming more and more common, which is a good thing. And, you know, conversation sometimes leads to change.
For sure.
And the conversation over the years has definitely escalated over time, and you know, is really putting a lot of pressure on the NFL to make some sort of change. I don't know if it's going to happen soon, but I think possibly within the next 5 to 10 years, we could see some sort of change. I'm hoping for it, and I know many people out there listening to this show right now are hoping for it. So, all right, well, let's shift gears right now really quick. We want to talk about the Yahoo and SI reports discussion really quick. Matt, you heard throughout the show, you've been reading about this whole thing. Athletes, first of all, with the Oklahoma State, you know, Cowboys, they're coming out now. Former athletes used to play for the team coming out that's saying, you know, they used marijuana. Some of them even sold, you know, drugs around, you know, around campus.
Oh, yeah.
Some are coming out and talking about favoritism in the world of academia, you know, how some professors would kind of let them slide knowing that they were football players and they were out there playing every Saturday. You know, there's so many reports, so many recruiting violations, even, you know, some reports coming out about sex now, that these players, when they would come and visit these schools, you know, they had girls waiting on them, kind of like a scene out of He Got Game. If you've seen He Got Game, where Ray Allen's being recruited, and you know what happens in that scene. But, you know, these reports are really coming out and becoming you know, topics of discussion, which we've known for years,
exactly.
Know, kind of happens.
Exactly. But it's everything that everyone has hinted at is like the seedier side of college sports. And now someone's finally shedding a light on it. And it happens to be 30 former players at a university. So, I mean, and this isn't just like, you know, one group of players. It's over a decade period. Like, it's not just one class that was, you know, the bad apples that moved through Oklahoma State. It's like, every 5 years, it's a different group. So clearly, it's more of a cultural problem at the university and probably in all of college sports. I feel like this is the tip of the iceberg.
Right, right. I feel as though so many of them do it. Maybe all of them do it, but until they get caught, that's when, you know, they start confessing and come out.
Yeah, exactly. Again, that's when Nick Saban starts having angry press conferences, and that's when, you know, Les Miles is putting his hands in the air.
Just saying, hey, you got me.
But like our caller Ann said, sometimes the coaches don't know.
I mean, sometimes they don't. Sometimes
you're trying to give your players the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
But, you know, some of the things in that Sports Illustrated article on Oklahoma State said that the coaches were joking with the players about their drug use. And it's clearly something was well known and well documented in that school.
Right.
You know, everybody knew.
Everybody. You know, it's really disturbing stuff. But like you said, sometimes, like Ann just called in, the coaches don't know and they feel betrayed after it comes out. So, all right, well, again, let your voice be heard on this subject. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Give us your thoughts on those, you know, controversial articles that are coming out about college sports. And, you know, if you got any thoughts about the whole, you know, Indian tribes, you know, references and, you know, sports teams using those names as the centerfold for their franchises. If you got any comments on that, go to facebook.com/currentsports and leave a comment. All right, well, Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney is at Michigan State University as we speak. Now, Delaney has led the Big Ten's athletic program since 1989. He sat down with MSU Athletic Director Mark Hollis in an interview-style format a few moments ago. Mark Hollis asked him about the Bowl Championship Series.
BCS, very controversial, very successful. The growth trajectory of college football can be directly traced to the success of the BCS in taking college football from a largely regional game with some national games to a game where almost every game every week has some impact. So what's going on at Boise matters to the people in Auburn. What's happening in East Lansing matters to the people in Waco. And so I think it's really created a great deal of interest, a great deal of value, a great deal of pressure, and more challenges.
Now, Commissioner Delaney also talked about the growth of Big Ten hockey, including more coverage on TV.
What's great is we have a conference which is 118 years old. We have hockey, which has been around for a long time, but in two regional divisions. With the addition of Penn State, we had an opportunity to create a championship. I'm really bullish on it. I believe that the Big Ten brand plus those six hockey programs will allow us to take it to another level, not only competitively, but from recruitment, branding, television perspective. I think within the next week or so, we'll announce a television schedule, which will be very robust, and we'll have a variety of partners. And I think we'll indicate the demand and the interest in helping Big Ten hockey take the next step.
Yes, Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney and MSU AD Mark Hollis are speaking at the September Economic Club Luncheon as we speak. Delaney is celebrating 25 years as Big Ten Commissioner. All right, folks, want to remind you all that Current Sports TV premieres tonight at 10 p.m. I sat down with Greg Kelser, and you can see that interview, the very first episode of Current Sports TV. You don't want to miss it. Here's a little bit of Greg Kelser talking about that historic 1979 NCAA championship game between MSU and Indiana State. Here's Greg talking about it.
You know, it's funny how that game has maintained a tremendous shelf life for a great many years. Obviously, the reason why is because Larry Bird, you know, the All-American from Indiana State, and Irvin Magic Johnson, the All-American from right here in East Lansing and Michigan State, they were the top players in the nation vying for the championship. It was a coming together of, you know, tremendous and you know, maybe even unmatched proportions. Those two guys, and Indiana State was an undefeated team trying to finish out an undefeated season. That captured everybody's imagination. It got people that really weren't even into basketball watching. And then you throw in the other elements, and let's be honest about it, race played a part in that, you know, because you had a black kid against the white kid, and all of that was part of the backdrop. That was all. Now, we as athletes, we were just trying to play a basketball game, trying to win it.
Right.
But the fact that the two of them went on to have just a tremendous rivalry at the NBA level, and we're given so much credit perhaps for saving the NBA, which was somewhat of a downtrodden league at that time, bringing it back to the stature that, you know, it enjoys now today.
Right.
They got a lot of credit for that. So for them having that rivalry carry on, but having that game be the start of it, I think has all helped, you know, feed the phenomenon that game is now regarded with.
Yes, that was Gregory Special K. Kelser. Just a little preview of Current Sports TV's premiere tonight. Again, tonight at 10 p.m. Get to your TV, folks, tonight. Current Sports TV, the premiere, tonight at 10 p.m. I sit down with Greg Special K. Kelser, a very interesting conversation with him, and he had a very interesting take on whether or not college athletes should be paid. Again, I believe that's Channel 23 here in Mid-Michigan, Channel 23 WKAR-TV, tonight at 10 p.m., Current Sports TV premiere. You were there, Matt, and Matt, he makes his TV debut. You had a pretty good question for Greg, man.
Yeah, I was nervous enough asking one question. I don't know how you kept it together, you know, conducting the whole interview.
Man, he makes it so easy because he's such a great guy.
Yeah, you know? You couldn't ask for a better first guest.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to watch it tonight. All right, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Shard and Matt Lutke. Engineer Aaron Young. Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Joseph Somick, rep from the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe of Michigan. Thanks for joining me, Joseph, on today's show. Same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.